Hey, what's up? Yeah, I'm Bruce, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bruce.
Oh, what a crowd, man. I'm glad this is not my first time speaking tonight. I want to say that, first off, before I introduce our speaker, it's really great seeing these babies in here tonight, you know. My sponsor told me years and years and years ago, he says, there is never a time in your life when you're closer to God than when you're a baby like that. You ain't had nobody a chance to ruin you yet. You know, you ain't heard none of the lies you're going to hear. So I'm in the presence of newness here. It's special, you know. And I had an experience tonight. I want to show everybody real quick about my two new pieces of jewelry. So I got a 19-month-old granddaughter that lives with me. And I was sitting on the couch trying to unwind from the day today. And she comes up with these two hair ties. So I'm sitting there going, what the hell am I going to put these things? And I give them back to her. And she comes over and she says, like this. And she takes my fingers and puts one on each finger. So, I said I'd wear them tonight. I don't know if I'll take them to work on Monday. Anyhow, I'm pleased, I'm present. Open your ears and stop talking if you can't hear me. Pay attention. Damn it. Anyhow, you made me lose my train of thought. See that? That's a short train, right? But anyhow, I'm honored to introduce this speaker tonight. Number one is the first sponsee I've ever had that made it a year. Yeah. Now, I haven't told him that until just tonight. You know? But anyhow, it's been a great ride. Great guy, got a great story. Just like the rest of us, we all got great stories. I had to tell him he couldn't write an outline. You know, see, I was told I had to speak from the heart, you know, and tell my story. I don't need any notes. But anyhow, I want to introduce you to my buddy Mark. Come on up here, Mark.
Thank you, Bruce. Since I'm a writer by trade and not allowed to write anything, this may not come off so well, but we'll see how it goes. My name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you all for being here. Please look at the floor, not me. That would be helpful. And believe it or not, I have been in front of bigger crowds, but they weren't paying attention to what I was doing, so that was much better for me. But we'll see how this goes. Okay. Thank you. I was born in Indianapolis. And I'm the youngest of three siblings. I was the baby boy, so I'm spoiled rotten. And first 3 or 4 years of my life, like any good alcoholic, I don't remember much of it. So it started coming along about 5, 6, or 7, doing little boy things. I played baseball mostly. I played a lot in the trees, in the forest behind the house. My parents couldn't find me, and, you know, it was a good life. And no responsibility, nothing to worry about, per se. And then when I was 8, my father worked for a bank, and he got a promotion. No, that time he got a new job in Lexington, Kentucky, which is where I consider home. It's where I grew up. And is this loud enough?
Probably picked up a little louder.
A little louder? All right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. So, anyway, Lexington's my home, and that was a little odd since I was born in Indiana. My dad went to IU, and he hated Kentucky, although he was from Louisville. And that's where my mother is also from, is Louisville, so the whole family's there. Again, you know, you're 8 years old, what do? You ride your bike, you go run around, play, et cetera, et cetera. Except when we moved there. See if I can get this out early. For about 4 years, I was... I was molested by a family member, a female family member. And that sucked. So, anyway, now that's out of the way. I kept playing baseball, and that summer, the baseball leagues were finished, and I couldn't play. And this is sports are a big part of what I do, what I still do. And I started playing soccer. I didn't know anything about it. My dad didn't know anything about it. But it was something to do, and I didn't know any of the kids at school and all that stuff. So anyway, then school started, and I was at third grade. Take your toys with you, play. I tried to make some friends, but, you know, you're the outsider. And even though it's in the middle and we didn't take a side, or they didn't take a side, Kentucky still considered the South, so I was a Yankee, Bruce. So, anyway, yeah, I started playing sports and eventually acclimated to it. I didn't go to practices a lot. I was still running around in the woods and doing whatever I was doing. And, you know, those next 2 years, that whole thing was still going on, and that continued until, you know, well, I was about 11 and a half, I guess, right about when middle school started, which is great because, you know, when you're in middle school, everything is perfect. You don't have zits, you don't have esteem issues, you don't have anything to worry about, especially girls when you're being molested by one. So I just bore down on school pretty much. I was a pretty good student, and I tried to blot it all out, basically, and just keep, you know, I don't know what the right way to say it is, but I used homework, playing in the, you know, playing sports. I focused myself on that because I could control it. And I don't know. I got pretty good at what I was doing. And I can skip ahead a little bit through middle school. I stopped playing baseball. The baseball coaches said, you can't play baseball and play soccer because, you know, we're communist and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I pretty much dedicated my life to school, church, and soccer, and not necessarily in that order. It varied depending on the time of the year. Soccer was a year-round thing. Church was a 2 or 3 times a weekly thing. And let's see, when was it? 8th grade. Had been about 2 years into going to Bible studies on Wednesday nights and Sunday night services. My older sister, they're both older than me, the middle of us three, started dating this guy, and he's a big part of my story. So anyway, they dated for 5 years, starting when I was in 8th grade, and he was a Sunday school teacher. He sang in the church choir. He did a lot of things that I really admired, and I guess when I was in 9th grade, things really got even more interesting in high school, because our schools were 10 through 12 was high school and 7 through 9 was middle school. And as it happened, I was the only freshman on the varsity soccer team, and my sister was a senior, so which was just absolutely glorious being the only freshman. I mean, I can carry water, I can carry cones, I can carry anything you want. But So I knew people. And when we started our sophomore year, I was very, very lucky to basically know 25 people in a school of 2,800 at the time, 2,900. So it was large enough that you could disappear if you wanted to. But it being Kentucky, it's basketball state. Nobody cared about soccer, but we did, and I did. And I kept focusing on it. And at that point, you go to Olympic development trials. So I hope this doesn't sound like gloating, because it's really not. It's, I made the state, you know, I made the state team, and you go to regional tryouts, and technically, I was one of the 100 best goalkeepers in the country. So I kind of hung, you know, I hung my identity on that a lot. And for good or bad, that, and I was still a good student. I suck at math, but I got by. I can honestly tell you that I got my mother's brain. She wrote all my dad's papers in college for him, or he would not have graduated. Like, literally, she wrote every one of them. And I think Bruce heard this story. My parents were recently down here, and his last paper would determine whether he graduated from Indiana's business school or not. And my mom wrote the whole thing. So anyway, I do have her brain, and I was very good at the English side, the writing side. I struggled with math. I struggled with science. So I focused on the things that I was good at. I took a lot of English classes. I took a lot of social studies, languages, Spanish, things like that. But let me jump ahead here a little more. And at the beginning of my, at the end of my junior year, my sister, who was 19 at the time, married Michael. And he was 22. So I had this, you know, he was an older brother to me, basically. And I learned to drive a stick shift, literally sitting between his legs in a 76 Honda Civic with a hole in the floor. And driving up and down hills and just doing all kinds of stupid things. But he was always there. And things were great. You know, life's good. I'm going to be a senior in a high school. And still playing on this team, and I'd never drank. I actually made a bet in seventh grade with my language teacher, because there were older kids that, and older brothers and sisters involved, and drinking was the thing to do. And I bet him in seventh grade that I wouldn't drink all the way through high school. And we never, ever knew what I was going to win until before the prom, my senior year. And I won that bet, and I took his BMW to prom. It was 3 weeks old, and I ragged the shit out of that thing. It was great. but anyway, excuse me. So before my senior year, summer's going along. My sister's just got married, still going on church retreats and all this stuff. And was gone probably 4 weeks out of 8 or 10 at different soccer camps, getting ready for my senior year, because there was college recruiting involved and all that stuff. And this is the part that really sucks. The day of my first game, my senior year, my mom, I was taking a nap, and my dad had actually gotten a new job and was living in Ohio at the time. Troy, for those of you who are familiar with Ohio. It's just north of Dayton. So there was also, while that summer was going on and my sister got married and I was gone, there was a possibility that I may have to leave Lexington and move to an entirely new city, not knowing anyone before your senior year. And looking back on it, that's stupid to think about it, but oh my God, I'm a senior and what am I going to do and all this nonsense. So it was about 2 hours before I was supposed to be at the field, and the phone rang, and my mom just started screaming, and I'm sorry, my brother-in-law had cancer, and he was 22 years old, and all I could think was, why him? You know, here I am, and with all my history of, you know, the things that happened to me, and, oh, I forgot to mention, yeah, I dated a couple cheerleaders, and that's completely overrated. They're stupid, and, whatever you guys think about it, if you didn't try it, believe me, it's overrated. There might have been some things that were not approved in the church, but they both went to my church, which is another thing that I probably glossed over a little bit. Well, I had this, feeling that I was supposed to be a good little Christian kid, and hell, I don't think any of us were. I really don't. Not any of the ones that I knew. And Michael was. And so for, about 25 years, I live basically thinking that should have been me. And that's why I drank. So, anyway, that went on, and God, that clock's not going fast enough. I played my, I went into the, after, you know, my mom screaming, and my sister was living in a different house, and my dad was driving in from Ohio for the first game, and it was Saturday afternoon, and I had to drive in and tell my coach, look, my brother-in-law has a 16-pound tumor in his kidney, around his kidney. And he asked me, so, you know, can you play? And I just remember looking at him saying, I don't know what the hell else to do. And it's because I could control that. And I think that's, looking back and knowing what I know now, as an alcoholic, we all want to control things. And I had no control over that. And I felt like the God that I, you know, when I was paying attention in church, I felt like the God that I was told about had just abandoned me. So anyway, I went through that whole season, and every game, I said a prayer, and I was just thinking about it last night, and we wear gloves in the goal. If you're not familiar with soccer, you wear gloves. And I used to kiss the posts, kiss my hands, and hit the crossbar. And a cross, you know? Of all things that I was depending on, it was a cross. Because they say that's your best friend. If it hit the ball hits the crossbar, it's less likely to go in than it is in. And the idea of being a goalkeeper is to not get scored on, to keep it at zero, which is another odd thing when I think about it, that my whole, it's so negative. I mean, my whole perception of everything was always keep it under control and do what you have to do just to save yourself, just to save your team, just to save your friends. And anyway, like I said, I was pretty good at it, and we went through the whole season, and I set a shutout record, and it was because I was playing for Michael and not me. And through another 4 years of college, I never had another season that good. Anyway, that ended, and I got all kinds of awards and ended up going to, of all places, ended up accepting a offer to play play college soccer in Columbus, Ohio. And that's pretty much the next chapter, and where for me is where I started drinking. I again didn't drink all through my freshman year. If you can believe it or not, I pledged a fraternity without drinking, which they weren't happy about. But I told them I don't drink, and I think I knew that. I think I knew it was going to be a problem if I ever started. And I had a couple sips of this or that that my dad, while he was grilling, I think Seagram 7 and Coke is nasty. It was when I was 6 or 7, and it's probably still nasty today. I don't want to know. But some of the kids at church during those lock-ins or whatever, they'd sneak something in, and I never did it. I never wanted it. And looking back, I'm pretty sure it's because that's my personality, that, I'm not very good at many things, but if I'm going to be good at it, I'm going to do the best I can. And it's funny because when I got to school as a freshman, I went through that whole thing, and actually one of my best friends, Angelique, she dated a couple of my teammates or whatever, and she always used to tell me, if you can't be good at it. And she was usually talking about her sorority sisters, but I told her, I picked the wrong damn thing to be good at. Because when I picked up that drink, it was on. And I was at Roanoke College visiting one of my best friends who also played soccer in school, and it was my spring break, and they were drinking vodka and cherry Kool-Aid, and oh god, you're right, yeah, you're all right. it never was good. So anyway, that's where I got my start, and it was all under control. And it was a weekend thing, and that went on for another 2 years through school. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were weekends where I was hammered the whole time because we were out of season, and fraternity sorority parties, Ohio State was playing, it didn't really matter what it was. I mean, I had friends that used to play Nintendo football, and they'd start the game with, okay, every touchdown we'll have a drink, and then by an hour and a half later it was, okay, every first down, and then another half hour later it was, every play we need to stop and have a drink. And the other thing that I look back on is they were always drinking beer, and being from Kentucky, what do you think I drank? Exactly. I like to joke that life starts at 90 proof and it just gets better from there. And that probably wasn't the best thing for me to be doing, drinking bourbon instead of beer, but they were playing all these stupid games with dice and cards and this and that. And I looked at them like, that takes too damn long. Just start doing shots. And that was, again, that was, you know, if you're going to be good at it. And I could pace myself for the most part. And for the most part, I never really got in any trouble. But then after, after the winter of my senior year, I just thought, well, hell, I'm never going to be here again. Why not start going out every night? So I did. And my grades were still, you know, my mom was pissed off that I graduated with a 3.97 instead of a 4.0, but I was taking a lot of easy English classes, all right? I mean, don't get the wrong impression. English classes are a joke. Don't let anybody fool you. They're simple. And my Spanish classes, that was my second major. That was easy, too. It was not like I was an engineering major or anything like that. But, yeah, I just started tying it on every night and ended up in another coincidence. I applied to graduate school in several of them, and the one I really wanted to go to was Emerson College in Boston, which at the time, I still don't know if this is the case, it was one of only three programs in the country that had a magazine publishing program. And that's what I wanted to do, was write for a magazine, work in a magazine. And I got in, I got the acceptance letter when I got home from buying a car the day after I graduated. So I was like, all right, I'll just defer for a year. So that was another year of just mayhem. I mean, really, I was actually working three jobs. I had a job as a legal writer at a law firm, and I didn't mention this, but I babysat two boys for 3.5 years, and I had power of attorney over them. I helped raise them while their parents were starting a business, a restaurant, and they're great. I mean, they're great. I haven't spoken to them in a while, but they were great to be around. They were great for me to be responsible for something finally. But you know, 9, 10 o'clock when the parents got home, see ya. I'm gone. I'm going out drinking, and I have to be at work at 8 o'clock, and I'll be there. And so I did that, and I was coaching at the time also, which was another interesting thing. I coached girls that were 3 years behind us in school. So when they were freshmen, my senior friends were really interested in getting to know all the girls that we had coached that came to our school. But anyway, I just partied that whole year. That's basically what I did. And I drove all over Columbus. I never blacked out. For better or worse, I never blacked out once. I always remembered where I was. I always remembered where I was going. It may not have been the straightest line getting there, but I did it. And then I moved to Boston, and I swore that, you know, I was done with that. I'm finished. Start a new life, start school, whatever. It's cold in Boston if you've never been there, and it sucks. And I hated it. It's a great city to be in if you're young and you have a lot of money, which I did not. Unfortunately, after 3 months there, I got a job as a concierge on Newbury Street for, it's a 36-unit building, and when I say I work for some of the wealthiest people in the world, their kids, I'm not exaggerating. It's nothing that I had to do. I just applied for the job, and they had a lot of money, and they liked to party, and I liked to party. And 6 nights a week, I liked to party. And I had a job working 1:30 to 10, which was perfect to party. And I don't know. I'd never seen anyone order a round of 10 bottles of $1,000 champagne, but they did it 5 or 6 times a night. And I don't like champagne, but it was free. You know, it was free drinking. And, you know, I'm 23 thinking, I got the world by the tail. I'm living in a big city. I'm hanging out with the beautiful people. Quick story about that. I can assure you, one night I was working and this kid was late to pick up his girlfriend, and I was already drinking. Nobody cared. You know, it was 10 o'clock and I got off at midnight when I was concierge. And he was late, and it was the night of the Giorgio Armani Spring Collection showing. So there was paparazzi everywhere. There were cameras up and down the street. And this kid comes in and says, "George is going to kill me. Can you move my car?" And I said, "Sure. You don't mind that I've been drinking, have you?" I mean, why I told him this, I have no idea. And he's like, "I'm not worried about that. It's just around the block." I said, "Okay, which one?" And he said, "It's the black 911 Carrera." I've never been that good looking in my life. I'm sitting in this black Porsche with all these fashion photographers, and people are looking at me, and I'm like, shit, that's not mine. But anyway, of a lot of different stories of being around, that was the kind of thing that I was around, and it wasn't healthy for me. I mean, I can make light of it now, but it wasn't good for me to have access to people that didn't care if they were spending $100 on my drinks. And I certainly didn't have, being in graduate school and working full time, so I was working 60 hours a week. I didn't have money. I was trying to save it, but it looked like I did. And that was a lot of fun. And for an alcoholic to have that much fun for free, I mean, why not? So that went on for another year and a half. And, went through my second winter, and they set the record, 127 inches of snow, and there was snow on the ground on June 1st around the stop signs, and I called my mom, and I said, "I'm coming home." And she said, "Where?" And I said, "Well, we've got a job in Nashville." So I moved here in the fall of 1996, and it was the same thing that I swore I'll never do it again. You know, I'm here. I'll calm down, I'll be responsible, et cetera, et cetera. And I did for a little while. And that lasted about 6 months, honestly. And I got, so we can make a segue here. I wasn't going out as much as I had been, but I was starting to drink at home some more. I was living in an apartment on between Dickerson and Gallatin Road on Broadmoor. And I woke up, I was still working an evening shift, which was, it was 1 to 9:30 here. And I woke up at 11 o'clock, and I was a little hazy from the night before, and this guy's coming through my window. And he straddled that window, and he's looking in there, and I walked out the door, my bedroom door, and I looked at him, half drunk, and I just said, "Can I help you?" Who the hell says that when there's a guy coming through your window? But that's how messed up I was still from the night before. And anyway, that prompted me to move, and that was that was interesting. So I got a house, and I swore again, okay, I'm done. You know, I got to be responsible. I got a yard to cut. What the hell? I got to plant flowers and stuff. Which you can do drunk. And I did. And, that was 1990. That was the fall of 1997. And I kept going. I finally started playing soccer again. And the guys that I was playing soccer with, I got hooked up with probably the best team in Nashville at the time, because everybody needs a goalie. They're like, I don't know. We're idiots. I mean, who else lays down in front of a ball for a living? I mean, people kicking you in the face, and they're like, "Good job, dude." But if you're good at it, there's not very many people around that still play at that age. And so I started playing with these guys, and I remember I got over to the guy's house before the first game, and you want to make a good impression or whatever. Well, they pulled out a bong, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you guys are going to play this game, and there's money on these games I was playing. The managers bet on the games and all this stuff, and I'm looking at them, I'm like, you guys are going to get high before you play a game. Well, why not? So, the first game I ever played with these guys, that was a $1,000 game? I don't know. I played in games that was up to $10,000 on the game between the managers, and God only knows how many people were betting on the games in the stands watching. And I'm nervous in front of you, but I've seen like 5-6 times as many people while I was playing in this league, and they all had money on the games. Don't get me wrong. I coach in this league now, and they're betting on my 8-year-olds, my 9-year-olds. Some people don't believe that. Some of the parents I coached didn't believe that until they went to buy a tortilla, and there were stacks of 20s behind, and the dudes were doling them out. And I'm like, that ain't changed from the tortillas. And anyway, so yeah, that was, and it sped up. And so anyway, basically the next 8 years, I played on that team, and I had 15, 16 drinking buddies. And we played a year round. I played 3 or 4 nights a week. And it was the same old crap. Just the same old crap every night. Go play a game. Probably get high before you play. Then go drinking with them afterwards. And get up and go to work. And that finally started slipping. And it got harder. I got older. It's not easy to, when your body starts failing you, to flop around on the ground. And, shoulders, knees, hips. So that was my excuse. Oh, my ankle hurts. I'm going to be a little late. And sure enough, my ankle was swollen. I wasn't lying about that part. I was lying about the part that I was smashed until 3 o'clock last night. And I had changed to a different position doing media relations about 4 years into that. So anyway, that was my life for about 8 years. And see if I can make this short. Then I met a girl, and she screwed up my life, and I blamed it on her. And that's why I kept drinking for the next 6 or 7 years, because she kept coming back at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm sorry. No, you're not. Come on in. That's the way drunks think. I thought, and I honestly thought, and this is serious, I honestly thought that she could fix me. I thought that she'll make me quit. She didn't. She just kept leaving. And she kept coming back. She kept leaving and coming back. And anyway, so that went on, and that was another good excuse to drink for a long time. And the consequences kept getting worse. More calling in sick, more raging hangovers that got worse and worse. And everybody's been there. I don't need to expound on hangovers. But the next big thing that happened and that finally set off the eventual whirlwind that got me here slowly was the flood of 2010. I had 3.5-4 feet of water in my house, and I just thought, I spent the better part of 20 years collecting all this nice furniture from my grandmother's and this and that, and if it wasn't on the walls, it was gone. And people just say, like Liston says, if you don't like your stuff, give it to me. Yeah. It's just stuff until it's all gone in a day. And you don't have anywhere to live. And you can't go home for 5 days because there's still water everywhere. And then when you get home, it smells. It smells awful. If you've never been around anything that's flooded, I don't recommend it. But my friends came and helped me, and the neighborhood looked like a war zone. We had to literally stack everything up, and my stuff was higher than the bottom of my roof. So I had about 12 or 14 feet of stuff that had accumulated that was now gone in 5 days. And what better excuse than that? Hell, I don't have any shit. Let's go drink. I stayed in hotels for 3 weeks, and they don't care what you do in a hotel as long as you pay them. I mean, they really don't. And I was staying close to work, and I finally figured out that I'd spent way too much money on hotels and I needed to get an apartment, but I still didn't know when I was going to be able to get back in my house thanks to Davidson Codes. No offense if you work for Davidson Codes, but you're lazy. So I got an apartment in Brentwood that was close to my house, and every night it was I just want to pass out. I mean, that was the first time that I intentionally, purposefully just wanted to obliterate everything and not feel. And that wasn't good. And I finally got back in my house and I didn't have anything. And I kept going and I kept calling in sick, and I finally sat at home for 2 weeks and literally drank and stared out the window for 2 weeks. I would get up, and I think I took one shower. I'd get up and I'd go to the liquor store and I'd buy more liquor. And I'd look out the window. Nothing changed. I mean, it's still the window, you know, there's grass might have grown a little bit, but anyway, I lost my job, rightly so. They had every right to get rid of me. I wasn't doing anything. And I didn't blame them. To this day, I don't blame them. I blame myself. But I think it's what I wanted. And so then I kept going, and unemployment for a little while. Started running out of that. Started calling Dad. Thank God that I have lovely parents that didn't know at the time that I was an alcoholic, but they do now. And he kept me afloat for a while, and then I got another job, supposedly, and I was working 70, 80 hours a week for this guy. The startup investment firm, I was doing the writing, doing all this marketing stuff, and 6 months into it, he decided to tell me, oh yeah, that $25,000 I owe you, we didn't raise that money. That's another damn good reason to drink. And I took it. So there was another 6 months that just went by. And I didn't want to do anything but drink. I didn't. I thought I found a great job and back on my feet. Yeah, when I wasn't on my back. And I got another job at another startup, and that was great for about 4 months, and he ran out of money. And that was another, you know, however many thousand. But the odd thing is what I owe in, from being a drunk and not paying my bills after losing those jobs, what I owe creditors is almost exactly what they owe me if they could have paid me. So I like to think that's God's little joke. That, you know, he was trying to tell me, you know, you shouldn't have been doing that all that time. But anyway, the thing that finally got me in here was that job was over. I had a guy move in. It was a friend of a friend, and he was there for about 5 months, and he wasn't paying me, and I was too drunk to try and argue with him to get money out of him or whatever. And I hadn't been out of the house in probably a month, I mean, for any length of time, and I thought I needed see some people. So I went down the street. There's a bar down the street, Scoreboard. Some of you may have been there. I went a lot for many years, because if you can get drunk or you can get a DUI in 2 miles, you deserve it. And I never got a DUI in those 2 miles. But that night I decided to take another friend of a friend home whose boyfriend wasn't answering his phone. Her friend wouldn't answer the phone, blah, blah, blah. I decided to drive all the way over to Old Hickory in Antioch, and I made it there, and I was weaving, and I knew it was bad. It's just one more time. How many times have I done this before? Come on, Mark. Just put it on cruise control. Thumbs up. Keep them on the lines, you know? Everybody's done it. Well, I made it up here to Donaldson Pike and Lebanon Road, and I hit that fence, and all the shit in my car started blinking, and the lights came on, and I was like, oh, whew, this is not good. So I had enough sense to realize this is not good. That's a fence I'm on top of, and there's a gas station behind me, and there's a lot of cars I can see in the rearview mirror. And there's a nice little camera in that car, and I could see them in that, too. So I backed over the fence, and I turned around, and I started driving, and I started thinking, it's only 5 miles. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it again. And I didn't. I got pulled over, and the usual routine, you know. I'm not a lawyer, so when he asked me if I'd been drinking, I said, yeah, way too much. And I thanked him for pulling me over before I killed somebody or myself. And it was all admissible in court, if you're any of you are lawyers. And anyway, I've done exactly what you told me not to do, run out of time before I got to the more stuff. But anyway, yeah, I got that DUI, and I called my dad in the middle of the night, and he wasn't happy. And I remember sitting in that holding tank or whatever they call it and thinking, I'm not like you people. Sure as shit as I was worse off than all of them probably. I blew a .32 and I was still walking, and that's not easy to do. Thank God I was coordinated from being an athlete, right? You know, I could be a .32 and still walk around, maybe not pass a field sobriety test, but I could still walk, damn it. And I sat there that whole night, and I got bonded out. And And somewhere in the middle of that night, you know, I knew I had to quit. And so I went home in a cab because they had my car. And I resolved to quit drinking on my own, which is apparently not AA approved. you need a counselor, or you need to detox, or you need to do something. And for better or worse, I drank about 12 beers a night. Or drinks, vodka, whatever it was. And I went 12, 8, 4, 2, nothing in 4 days. So my sobriety date is April 29th. I was pulled over on the 24th. April 28th, excuse me. And that just passed last month. And I did not know that I was the first person to make it a year, Bruce. I was wondering if you were going to ask me if I was ever going to make it or not, but now I know the truth. And anyway, so here I am, and it's been an interesting year. The last 7 months, when I lost my house, I moved in with an active alcoholic and addict, which is a challenge. I'm not supposed to talk about it to Bruce, but I'll tell you all about it. It sucks, you know. Crack stinks, and it's been a mess. And I hope that's going to be over soon. I finished yesterday at midnight. My probation was over for a year for the DUI. I'll get that breathalyzer thing off my car soon, and. You know, through all of the past year, no, I don't talk because I don't like to. I like to listen, and I like to write. And if you would give me a topic beforehand, I could write something for you. But so I go to the meetings, and no, I don't talk a lot. And now you probably know why, because I stutter and I stammer and I want to cry, and you know, I'm here. And I'm proud of it. And that's it.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back.
It works in your work.